Ready to podcast. I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God, and I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to work and food, and I've had control issues. We're talking about control issues right now. I've had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with rage, with panic attacks, and with depression. Lewis misread my notes. He thought the lesson tonight is gardening your ego. You just get a little hoe and a rake and a wheelbarrow, and you get your triple 15, and you get out there and work on your ego and garden it. And no, the name of the lesson tonight is guarding my ego. And I want to start out by just telling you my story just a little bit, and then we're going to kind of move into more of an application. I had this lesson all worked out earlier in the week, and I sat down to it today, and I thought, this is not something you can teach on a conceptual level. You can't teach it like you would in school and teach it as a subject. You have to start out with, this is my experience. So if you're going to understand this experientially, then I have to share it experientially. So I'm not going to share it as a concept. I'm going to share it as my shit, my stuff, you know. So, but we're going to end in a... Yeah, it's going to smell in here. But we'll get more conceptual as we go along. So what I want to start with is I've realized as I've been in recovery that my core issue, the one that I take with me everywhere I go, there is no geographic cure for it. There is no circumstantial cure for it. There is no change in relationships that deal with it. Wherever I go, I take this with me. And it doesn't matter if I'm in a good mood, bad mood, it doesn't matter. Wherever I go, I take this with me. And it's this dilemma that I live with all the time. Who I want to be versus who I actually am. Who I want to be versus who I actually am. I want to be generous, but I catch myself being greedy. I want to be patient, and I catch myself being impulsive. I want to be gracious, and I catch myself being judgmental. I want to be a good listener, and I catch myself, and so do you, catch me being a motor mouth. I mean, that's my MO. Here comes the motor mouth. I want to be a people person, but I catch myself being a hermit, a cave dweller. I want to be respected, and I catch myself feeling like I'm just being rejected or tolerated a lot of times. So, you ever been there? Who you want to be, the person you want to be, and then the person you see when you look in the mirror. The person you deal with when you put your head on the pillow at night and you're there all alone, just lost in your thoughts, and you say, it happened again. I went through a day wanting to be this person, wound up being this person. And so I would want to call it a dilemma, but it's deeper. That word is not powerful enough. It's almost like Paul talked about the things I would want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, I go ahead and it's he calls himself a wretched man. It's like a civil war, an internal civil war. And so it's much more than just a dilemma that we can't figure out, a math equation that just won't add up. This is like torture. It's torment that we live with all the time. Sometimes it's worse than others. But you know as well as I do that when you get in your worst times, this is the core of it. Today did not turn out the way I wanted it to. It's not because of the people in the day. It's not because of the circumstances in the day. When I get honest, it's because I wasn't the person I wanted to be today. Am I hitting home here? We always blame circumstances or we blame somebody else. But when we get in the privacy of our own mind, we realize, no, that's not it. That's not it. I am not who I want to be. So I don't think none of us, okay, so that's my experience. So let's talk about it a little more. I think we're all on the same page now. I don't think any of us are ever good with this disconnect. It's what, you know, so we fight it. We try to be more loving. We try to be a better listener. We try to work at not judging. Dr. Phil, you know, how's that working for you? If we've not learned anything else in recovery, surely we have learned that working harder on these kinds of things is pointless. We still try. I mean, I do. But when it all boils down, look over the last 5 years at those things you have struggled and tried so hard at. How's that going? You know, I suck at the same things I've always sucked at. You know, I struggle with the same things. It's okay, I don't do this, okay? I don't do this literally. This is a figurative statement. Okay, I don't hit my wife as often as I used to hit my wife. I have never struck my wife, ever. Don't you dare tell. No, I have never physically struck my wife. But it's like we say, well, I don't hit my wife as often as I used to. Well, aren't you special? Aren't you special? You know? What kind of a-hole hits his wife? You know? Well, I don't do it as often as I used to. Come on. So this dilemma, we kind of try to justify it by saying, well, I'm not as bad as I used to be, but the motor that runs the activity is just as active as it ever was. We've just learned to throttle it back some, but it's still active. It's still, the motor's there. I don't want the motor to be there. You know what I'm saying? I don't want the motor to be there. It's not that I don't hit my wife. You know, I'd love to brag that I don't hit my wife as often as I used to. Why would you ever? What motor's driving that? You see what I'm saying? So that's where it doesn't work. And so, but we fight to be more loving, less judgmental, more generous, more better listener, all this stuff. We fight to do this. And here's what we get. Here's the results of it, which we think is our problem, but it's not. It's just the results of that deeper problem. We're worn out. We're angry. We're afraid. We're depressed. We're shamed. All these things we name off when we introduce ourselves. Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I deal with such and such. Where do those come from? Those come from this frustration that we want to be something, but we're this. That's where all this stuff comes from. And there's no escaping it because wherever we go, there we are. You can't walk away from yourself. You take this into every relationship, every job situation, every social encounter, every moment of your life, you take this with you, and so you're stuck with it. And so here's where the bite is. Here's where, what's this got to do with control issues? I'm working tooth and nail to control all this stuff, to be a better listener, to be more generous, to be more, you know, I'm working tooth and nail to control all that, and I can't do it because I can't control my motives. You know, think about the times when you have been sicky sweet to somebody and down inside all you wanted to do was punch them out. And you walked away feeling good about that? You walked away saying, I cannot change my motives. Ugh. You know, our desires we have, our attitudes, our moods. We've got all these things that are in here, and we want to control them because they're kind of the motors that run all this stuff that may either make you greedy or generous. They're the motors that run it all. You know, your motives, your attitudes, your desires, your moods, all this. That's what runs all this stuff, and you can't control that stuff. Did you ever, I forget what, was it his leg? Do you remember Steve Martin, the comedian? In one of his comedy routines, as he would get up there, and his leg would start going, and he'd say, I can't stop my leg. Do you remember that? And it's stupid, but it was funny back then. But you think about, you have an appendage, you have a part of you that should be under the control of your brain. It's like, I can't control it. I can't help it. I hate that person. I'm treating them nice. I'm being nice. I'm upfront. They think I love them, but I hate them. And I really want them to be found out for who they are. You know, I really worked hard to accumulate this pile over here. I'll give you some of this junk. This is my cast off. This is my good stuff. Dang, I don't want to give it to you. Oh, shoot, I don't want to share it with you. But I want to be generous. But this is my special stuff. You know, could be time, could be money, could be whatever, attention, whatever. I'll give you this, but I don't want to give you this. You see what I'm saying? And we may belligerently and reluctantly give away some of this stuff, but inside we're saying, oh, please say you don't want it. Please give it back. You know? So we've got these attitudes. We've got these motives, desires, moods. And would anybody here ever, I mean, maybe we would, maybe we've got some holdouts, say, well, you just need to work harder at that. If you know how to do that, and if you can say, yeah, look at my track record over the last 10 years, I've worked harder at it, and I am not quantitatively, but I am qualitatively a different person. My motives are squeaky clean. My desires are just, you know, straight as an arrow. Everything is just doing great. I'll get up and let you teach the rest of the lesson. Because I've never met anybody, and I can't do it. That's why Wayne and I came together 15 years ago, and how are you doing at that? I'm sucking at it. How are you doing? I suck at it too. We're supposed to be pastors. We're supposed to have this generous, kind, loving thing down. We ain't got it down. We've got people thinking we've got it down. You get really good at that as a pastor. Just, I'm blowing the cover on all pastors. You get really good at acting like you're all sanctified and good and everything's cool. But inside, you go home and you're frustrated and you're angry and you're dealing with all the same shit everybody else deals with, and yet you can't, don't let them see you sweat. They even teach you that in school. They teach you that in seminary. Don't let them see you sweat. And Wayne and I kept that up as long as we could possibly keep it up. And then it finally came to the place where I can't do this anymore. And I said that to myself, and I looked at him and he said, you too? Because I can't. So there must be some alternative. There must be something, because why would God put billions and billions of human beings on this planet, not just pastors, everybody? Why would he put billions and billions of people on this planet to struggle with this and to be miserable? We got 80, 85, 90 years of pure misery on this planet. And God says, yeah, that was what I was planning. That's why I put you here. I put you here so you could be miserable and struggle with this. And we're going to call him a good God. Or we misread the scripture where we think it's telling us to be perfect and we think, okay, God's messing with us some way. He laid this out there. And the way I've heard it before means we're supposed to be perfect. That's the way I heard it when I was young. Did you hear it that way? You know, you're supposed to be perfect, and I can't do it. So this is some cruel prank that God is playing on us. He's holding a carrot out that he knows we'll never be able to get, so he keeps pulling it away from us. And he's up there enjoying this some way. So see, every which way we came at it was like, this can't be God's design for humanity. There's no way this is God's design. So what is it? What is God's design? And I think you know what's coming next. God's design is for us to stop trying. God's design is for us to go back to the garden where we were naked and we were just plain humans. We were not superhumans. We were not perfect humans. God never said Adam and Eve were perfect. He said it's very good. They weren't perfect. The fruit didn't make them imperfect. They were already imperfect because they weren't God. I'm trying to see if we got anybody to throw anything at me. That was a hard pill for me to swallow, to realize Adam and Eve were not, they were very good, but they weren't perfect. The Bible never says they were perfect. The story says they were good. And Satan came along, the evil one, the dark side, whatever you want to call it, Darth Vader, I don't care what you want to call it, came along and said, guess what? You can be better than imperfect human. You can be like God. You can be perfect. And they bought it. Yeah, we opt for that. We don't like being humans that are flawed. So we want to be something other than human. We talked about this last week some, and we've been in a mess ever since. They saw who they were, and they said, I don't like who I am. I want to be something else. And we have reaped the benefits of that ever since. So we live every day of our life wanting to be somebody that we aren't. So the secret in all this, to me, and it worked for Wayne too, is to say, how about I just be the mess up I am? How about I just be the greedy, motor mouth, judgmental person I am? How about I just be that and let God be the perfect one? So I'm just going to be the mess up and let him be perfect. But the secret is, will he love me? If I take off my fig leaves, will he love me? If I let him know I don't feel so generous toward this person, will he still love me? If I let him know that I'm judging that person who lives down the street, will he still love me? If I let him know that I'm whatever human flaw, if I let him know, will he still love me? And the answer that Wayne and I found was yes. Yes. God said, I've been waiting forever for you to just take off your fig leaves. I've been waiting forever for you just to come to me and say, I'm going to stop trying to be somebody other than who I am, and I'm just going to be me. Do you still want me? And he says, yes. He says, yes. He says, I've been waiting for this forever. Forever for you finally just to come to me the way you are and just let me love you. So we thought, why not try that? The other has not worked. Why not try that? So Wayne and I together started to explore grace. What would happen with a God who loves us with all our mess ups? If we just get honest about it, what would happen with a God like this? And I've shared this with you dozens of times. As we allowed God to love us the way we were, stingy, I'm speaking for me now, I'm not speaking for Wayne, greedy, impulsive, judgmental, motor mouth, hermit, all that. As I let God love me that way, all that started to change. It just all started to change. And I don't even know how. And I don't even know when. It just changed. I have always, my wife would attest to this, always been a hermit. I've always been a cave dweller. Don't you bother me. You stay away from me. Why was I a pastor? You tell me. I don't know. I could not stand people. I didn't want to be around people. So I rode horses all the time. I fished all the time. I hiked all the time. I hunted all the time. I isolated every chance I could from people. I got so tired of people coming by the house while I was trying to study to prepare a sermon. I built a little shack out on a ridge farm that I had permission to go on, and I would go out there and study in my little shack for hours at a time because nobody knew where it was and they couldn't find me. But I was doing God's work. That's what I told myself. And I asked God over and over, why did you ask me to be a pastor if I can't stand being around people, if I'm not a people person? Why did you ever ask me to be a pastor? I never understood it. I wanted to be a people person, but I wasn't. Okay, so that's past tense. So since I got in recovery and since Wayne and I started to explore grace, I absolutely love to be around people. I've become a people person. Didn't work at it. Didn't set that out as a goal. I just thought, oh my gracious. And this is the biggest change that's happened in me, that I've sat back and I've had to look in the mirror and say, Is that really me? Are you just faking it, Wendell? And it's like, no, I really want to be around people. I really, really love people now. Even awkward people, even people who don't agree with me. I really love to be around people. I didn't work at it. I didn't strive for it. It just happened. I had to fall back in grace, had to stop trying to improve myself and fall back in grace, and that's how the change happened. Now, I've had several people, it's happened a number of times, where people say, okay, your grace thing you keep talking about, it sounds like the most lazy-ass, apathetic thing I've ever heard. So you just sit under a tree and God's going to do everything for you. And I've gotten to the place now where I want to look them in the eye and say, if you think it's so apathetic and lazy, you try it. You try taking your hands off your own life. You try taking your hands off the controls of your life and letting God love you just the way you are. And then you come back in a week or two and tell me it's lazy and apathetic. Because it is the hardest thing I've ever done. The only thing I work at now is not working. It is really hard not to work. It is very hard not to work. Because that's what makes you valuable, right? That's what makes you worth something, is if you can work hard. Hey, you work hard at building something or baking something or mowing your lawn or whatever, but at self-improvement, you suck at it. We all do. So we have to come to the place where we say, not my job anymore. If I want something to do, I'll go out and peel potatoes or trim trees or something. But this job of self-improvement is not my job. It's God's deal. So, we got around to gardening, didn't we? At the very end, we got around to gardening. Yeah, Lewis had it. He told me. So that's part of my story and part of Wayne's story, and I hope it's helpful. Wayne told me before he died, he said, literally the last conversation we had, he said, you know what? He said, I got about 10 sermons I preach, and that's it. He said, I just changed the stories and change, but he said, I've got just 10 things that I feel like I need to tell people. And it all had to do with this. It all had to do with grace and just letting go and letting God take over your life. So, my desktop at home on my PC is a picture that John Seth photoshopped of me and Wayne in the Mac. And I looked at it today and I started crying. I thought, I miss him so bad. He's my brother. I miss him so, so bad. But I looked at this book that published today and I thought, he's not dead. He's still here. And hopefully this book's going to help a lot of us to take the steps we want to take in grace. The lady who's working on the... I'm going way over time. I'm a motor mouth. I already told you that. The lady who's laying out... she's going to have to come here because you're going to have to meet her. She's an angel. She lives in Katy's, Kentucky. Her name is Cheryl. She's laying out my book, and she's the one that runs it into Amazon, gets it published and everything. This is no big deal. Anybody can do it. Super easy. But I came up with my own publishing company. It's called Shoot From the Hip, because that's what I do most of the time, is just shoot from the hip. And so it kind of has a cowboy theme and whatever. And Wayne used to like to ride horses. Of course, I raised horses and broke them and could shoe them and everything for years. And so he and I both liked horses. And so she came up with this logo, this branding for Shoot From the Hip publication. You'll see it on the back of the book. But it's a cowboy riding a horse, leading a horse that's empty. And there's a sun, a setting sun, that silhouettes that empty horse. And I thought, oh my gracious. I bought the first horse, leading the horse that Wade used to ride. And I thought, she didn't realize what that meant when she came up with that logo. Man, it hit me. It hit me. And I thought, that booger's still on that horse, just nobody could see him. But he's there. He's still on that horse. So anyway, nah, bring the Kleenex. You're up.